Coming up this week on The Right Side, a look at Canada's 2017 federal budget and its allocation of funds. M103 has been passed, but to what end? Premier Notley says a PST in Alberta needs a mandate. Meanwhile, the media misdirects on Snapchat and cardboard cutouts of the Prime Minister. This is The Right Side, Episode 9, recorded Saturday, March 25th, 2017. No room for gushing. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Right Side. Shannon Patrick here, as per usual, every week. Welcome.
Good to be here again.
And if...
Bright, sunny March day.
Oh, yeah, for you guys, eh? You guys are probably getting ready to count the flowers. We're still dealing with melting the snow away here in Alberta. But that's a difference, of course, between BC and Alberta. You guys might be wondering what we're talking about. No, this isn't a podcast where we talk all about flowers and counting flowers and snow and weather. This is The Right Side, and what we endeavor to do here is cut through the mainstream media's bias and sensationalism in the stories that they like to talk about each and every week pertaining to you, the citizens of Canada, Alberta, and BC, and sometimes Saskatchewan as well. So, that's what we endeavor to do here at The Right Side, and we're going to do that this week. And we got a very full slate of stories for you guys this week, including one look back at a previous story that has since come to fruition, for good or for worse, and some other things relating to, of course, Canada's money and Alberta's money as well. So let's get started.
Indeed.
Okay, so our first story this week is the federal budget that was brought in this Wednesday, right? It was Wednesday, I think, yeah?
Yeah, it was indeed Wednesday.
Okay, it feels like so long ago.
It does.
That's how forgettable this budget is, aside from the numbers associated with it, really. You know, this budget was quote-unquote geared for everyday folks, and it brings in the following for everyday folks for the citizens of Canada, and that is a $28.6 billion budget deficit for this year, when we were promised in the last election campaign that this would be no more than $10 billion. It also brings in $5.2 billion for skills development in areas whose regions are affected by unemployment. Also, $3 billion for support of innovation over the next 5 years. So, for example, artificial intelligence research at the University of Alberta is one of those. A 5% increase in EI premiums up to $1.68 per $100 of insurable earnings. There's no new taxes in the budget, but yes, you are getting dinged on this EI premium increase up to $1.68. The good news, though, as spun by the media of this budget, is that they plan to reduce the federal debt-to-GDP ratio over the course of the coming Liberal mandate. Now, for those of you guys out there unaware of what the debt-to-GDP ratio is, it is the amount of debt that the government holds, kind of like a family that holds debt in credit cards or mortgages, compared to how much the entire economy produces as a whole. That's what GDP is. All of our exports and pretty much all the economic output of Canada. So they are going
to basically put it in. So to put it in layman's terms, it's basically you're able to have a higher limit on your credit card if you make more money, so to speak.
Right, and that's essentially what federal debt to GDP ratio is. So, but you know, it's shrinking, and the shrink that we're supposed to be excited about is a shrink from 31.5% to 30.9% by the year 2022.
Which is what, 0.6%?
Yeah. I mean, that's good. We're headed in the right direction on that, but that doesn't address the elephant in the room that there's borrowing being spent. The debt is increasing. And as we talked about previously, you know, we're going to be a half a trillion, $1.5 trillion in debt by 2052 if this current course continues, which means we're going to be spending huge amounts of money each and every year on servicing that debt with interest. So, yeah, while the ratio is shrinking, the debt is increasing, and we're going to need to keep spending on that. You know, they say there's only $5.7 billion in new spending over the next 6 years because most of what was brought out in this budget was brought out in last year's budget, which is true. But there's some fishy stuff in the numbers reported in this budget. You know, they say that there's no new spending, but if you look on the year-over-year expenditure increases as forecasted in the budget, those are actually going up. So while there's no new spending this year, as in, let's not like allocate money, because that's what happens in a budget, is you get a certain pool of money and that needs to be allocated to various departments and resources and initiatives, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's so, generally how taxes and government right. work. You know, it goes to fund things that are important to people.
And, you know, they say they're not doing any of that, but the truth of the matter is that the spending is increasing year over year, even though they say there is no new spending. So that's a pure lie brought to you guys by the media. Also, they are increasing this year with $3 billion of new spending, which is for the Economic Contingency Fund. If there's a recession, for example, if interest rates rise, but if the recession is anything like we saw in 2008, or if it's a crisis we're not even aware of yet, $3 billion ain't going to cut that. So,
yeah, especially on a $28.6 billion budget deficit, you know.
Exactly.
$3 billion of that, if you just pay it back, it doesn't even do that much.
And
I mean, $3 billion is a lot of money, but when you're talking about an entire country, it's really not that much.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the real alarming feature here is that there remains no plan to get back to balance in this Liberal mandate. You know, I assume that will be left to a second mandate should something like that arise. We'll have to see what happens in 2019 based on that. But, you know, overall, I think that, you know, while it seems as though we're heading in the deficit direction on this, whether or not that's a good idea, I'm not really so sure that maintaining such large deficits is good, especially in a time when the economy is growing at around 2%, which is the best we've seen since the 2008 recession. So the spending is a bit of a head scratcher in terms of basic economic theory. So,
and it seems like the Liberal Party is just insistent of waving their magic wand over this debt to GDP ratio thing. They're like, oh, look at this. We're doing a really good job. We're reducing it. But really, they're just trying to point out that that's really the only good statistic about it. You know, they're really trying to cherry pick it to make it
That's not a good statistic when you split it apart.
Yeah, exactly. And especially when it's only 0.6% reduction. I mean, that's not even a good statistic right there from what they're trying to champion.
Yeah. I mean, if it was a couple percent on the order of GDP, sure, that might be interesting. And, you know, another thing that is really striking about this budget is that it is really eerily focused in on what Trudeau himself said when he was leader of the third party, and that is, of course, that the budget will balance itself in a now infamous CBC interview. So you can kind of see the economic policy of this government right on display here. And, you know, normally when it's come to Trudeau in the past couple of years, the press and whatnot have actually been willing to give him a pass, but there have been some posts everywhere, all the way from Andrew Coyne to Stephen Gordon in the National Post, saying that this budget really, you know, doesn't do anything for the middle class and it lets them all down again. So it's quite shocking to see that Trudeau is actually being turned on here. And that in itself, I think, really just goes to show that there is nothing in this budget.
I think another part that's been decried quite a bit was the fact that he's giving more and more money to the so-called have-not provinces, which is, I think the argument there is that you're just furthering the incentive for them to stay there. It's kind of like a person on welfare. Eventually, you want them to be able to get a job and be able to, you know, be self-sufficient and handle their own problems and whatnot without having to get assistance from the government so that the government can spend that money on other things. Now, when you're talking about an entire province, like, for example, Nova Scotia or Newfoundland or PEI, where there's been a lot of problems economically, giving more and more money to those provinces, it's kind of worrisome because it's saying to even the provincial governments there and the people that live there that say, we'll be fine. We can still do what we've been doing because the money is still going to come in from the federal government.
Yeah, indeed. And I think that gets to one final thing on this note. What does it mean for you guys, the citizenry? And ultimately it means that this government is going further and further into debt. There's no plan to return to balance, which means for you that your tax dollars, rather than spending and purchasing services or new military equipment or new bridges or new roads, part of that is going to be going to service that debt. So part of your tax dollars is just evaporating, so to speak, not being put to real good use.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's the real downside of that.
Exactly. And that's why we always want to strive for balanced budgets and reducing of federal debt in governments at the federal and provincial level.
At all levels, I think.
True. All right. So, what do we got next?
So with that, we're going to go on to our next story, which is that the Canadian House of Commons has passed motion M103. On Thursday, even as the new poll says that most Canadians would vote down anti-Islamophobia motion. So basically, this was the House of Commons voting to condemn Islamophobia and all forms of systemic racism and religious discrimination. But the vote wasn't unanimous because the Liberals and the New Democrats and the Green Party basically consisting of Elizabeth May, were in favor of it, but most of the Conservatives and all of the Bloc Québécois MPs were opposed to it. The vote ended up being 201 to 4, rather, and 91 against. Two Conservative MPs voted in favor of it, Ontario MP Bruce Stanton and the leadership candidate Michael Chong. The Liberals, including Khalid, who was the sponsor of the bill, or the motion rather, maintained that the motion would no way infringe on speech rights and would instead be a powerful symbol of solidarity with Muslim Canadians. She said, quote, "Motion number 103 serves as a catalyst for Canadians to speak out against discrimination and be heard where they may not have been heard before," she said on Tuesday. The motion doesn't change any existing laws. It doesn't create any new laws either. And yet, an Angus Reid poll finds that 3 in 10 of those surveyed believe Khalid's motion is, in fact, a threat to Canadians' freedom of speech.
You know, I find that very interesting for two reasons. First one is that, you know, in general, I don't think Canadians on the whole are versed on the difference between a motion and a bill, because a motion governs the House of Commons. It doesn't govern the rest of us. So, but while this motion did pass, it also means that the government will undertake consultations and studies about this to see if a bill is necessary to be brought forward in the House of Commons. So that's why it's kind of a double-edged sword. And, you know, on the whole of it, there's nothing wrong with a motion like this. It's just the fact that, one, it didn't define Islamophobia, and two, it kind of leaves all the other religions out in the cold here. So those are the two main issues with this. And it's quite striking that 3 in 10 Canadians wouldn't vote for this. Granted, I think it was like 28% were still undecided or something on this. But, I mean, it kind of goes to show that Canadians as a whole aren't up for the whole virtue signaling aspect of what this government seems to be gunning for these days.
Mm-hmm. And I think it wasn't just three in ten wouldn't vote for it. It's that even a lot of people that would vote for it or thought it was a good idea still didn't think it was really going to do anything or
right,
necessary.
A threat to Canadians' freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just the 3 out of 10 that thought it would be really terrible. It was also a lot of the people that didn't think it would do anything whatsoever, and why it shouldn't be even brought up at this point. And
Yeah,
you know,
I
and the
mean,
media this past couple weeks have just been shoving M103 down our throats. I mean,
and
it's just a motion in the House of Commons. It's not even a rule. It's more like, as the Pirates of the Caribbean quote goes, it's really more of a guideline for how the House of Commons members govern themselves.
exactly. And, you know, I think with the media shoving it down Canadians' throats so much, as you say, this is something that the media is jumping on so much for some odd reason. I'm not sure what that reason is. Perhaps they forgot that, you know, the vast majority of Canada is covered by rural spaces, and Vancouver and Toronto are only two cities, you know, because you really can't compare, say, even Edmonton and Calgary with Vancouver and Toronto. Yes, they're large cities, but they're completely different than those two are. So, and then you got other cities, you know, like Regina and Winnipeg as well, and then all the other small cities like Halifax and whatnot on the East Coast. So it seems as though it's a Toronto and Vancouver bubble kind of thing that feels, okay, let's put this down the throats of Canadians. And, you know, when people are watching the news and they see carnage on the TV of the terrorist attack in London this week at Westminster, and then in the next segment they hear about M103, is that really supposed to make us feel good, M103, right? So, you know, I think that the vast majority of this is driven by the media, and should emotion like this come forward where, you know, hate speech laws might be amended or something, we really need to worry about that. And that's why I think it was so important to draw such attention to this motion in the first place, though not in the way the mainstream media is doing so.
And I think something that's even more telling is that out of all of it is that Quebec, surveyed in the Angus Reid poll, there is the only province that where there's a majority thinking that the idea that anti-Muslim sentiments have been overblown is a minority opinion. Most other provinces think that it's been overblown, and Quebec is the only one that thinks it's actually a serious problem.
Right.
And
And
I think a lot of that might have been because of the mosque
well,
attack way back
maybe.
when, but a lot of it might just be due to just differing
It's the
culture
way
and whatnot.
Quebecers are.
Yeah,
And you got to
exactly.
remember, the whole headscarf debate started in Quebec last election, was, you know, completely blown out of proportion in English media, but there was nothing about it in French media. It was a, you know, a fine thing in French media. And,
Yeah.
you know, that's why I don't rule out in 2019 a return to power of the conservatives with a huge conservative caucus from Quebec, given the recent sentiments. So,
And just the
I think
fact that
if
the Bloc aren't really
Right.
nearly as much of a
I
difference
think,
maker as it was before.
yeah, I think we've also proved that the Quebec voter base can move between the Bloc and the NDP and the Liberals based on what the issue is. So whoever's going to support them best, they'll vote for.
Exactly.
All right. Well, shall we move on to Alberta right now?
I think we shall. Let's hop on the plane from Toronto or Vancouver and let's head to
Yeah, much
Alberta.
nicer here. Sorry for anyone out there who lives in Vancouver or Toronto. Vancouver is pretty nice. I'm sure Toronto is too. But anyways, this week, Premier Rachel Notley in Alberta said that there will be no PST in Alberta without a mandate from voters. So, she said she wouldn't bring in the sales tax without seeking the mandate. And of course, that means that this will become an issue in the next election for her. And this came up because Saskatchewan is increasing its PST by a couple points, and Alberta has some of the same budgetary issues as the N well, I almost said the NDP government in Saskatchewan, but that's not true. But anyways, Rachel Notley says that the sales tax is not something that can be pulled out of the back pocket without first campaigning on it. An issue like a sales tax is something that, quite frankly, you need to put on the population, she said on Tuesday. You can't just pull it out of your back pocket without ever giving them any heads up or any opportunity to engage on it. She said that bringing up a PST might be talked about in the next election, but she won't move on it before that. All right. well, that's nice to know that the next election is going to center around campaigning on a PST. I don't know any Albertans who would vote for a PST. I don't know anyone who would vote for new taxes that you have to pay on practically everything for. And I also think that this is incredibly hypocritical of her, given that she didn't campaign on the carbon tax and yet pulled that out of her back pocket last Easter weekend. So, I'm not sure which the correct answer is here, whether or not she likes pulling things out of her back pocket or if she thinks that you need a mandate for things, but she's saying both here.
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting is you really have to take the words of what she says. You know, she says she wouldn't bring a provincial sales tax without seeking a mandate. Now, seeking a mandate just means you're getting elected to government, really.
And that's right.
You're the ones that are able to make the decision. This doesn't mean that it might be a referendum issue. It means that if she gets reelected in 2019, it means that she'll say, oh, well, clearly they want a provincial sales tax because that's what we want to put in. I mean, I think that's what she did with the carbon tax, that she put that in because she thought, oh, well, clearly they want an NDP government.
You know, I still have a copy of the platform from 2015 saved here on my computer, and I can pretty much guarantee you that there is no carbon tax mentioned in that platform document. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a shell game there, and you know, you think that you're electing a populist government. I think lots of people were hoping that the NDP in Alberta would be, you know, the traditional populist prairie NDP, but they're just proving to be traditional NDP at this point, I think. And this is a warning to everyone out there that if you don't want to see a sales tax and you don't want to see more taxes, you got to vote for someone else other than the NDP in 2019. Because, I mean, I'll ask you, based on your experience in BC, how much extra does that PST count for you guys? How much is your PST there?
Our PST here is 7%. Now, I'll just use an example. Yesterday, I had to take my car in for a bit of work, and the total came out, and I had to pay $32 of GST and then an additional $46 of PST on the bill. that's $50 that I wouldn't have had to spend if I was in Alberta.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's a lot of the economic growth in Alberta over the past few decades have been because there wasn't a PST. Like, you just think of the places like the West Edmonton Mall, where people come from all over the
Lots of BCers there. I mean, you take a weekend like Family Day or, you know, spring break, you see pretty much everyone from the two neighboring provinces, BC and Saskatchewan, coming here to shop because it's just that much cheaper to stock up on shopping for that year of clothes and other goods.
Yeah, and there's other places like Cross Iron Mills down near Calgary, where all the outlet stores are, where a lot of people go to shop there too, because there's a lot of good stores down there that you can't really find too many other places, and there's no PST. Like, I've always thought that a government in Alberta trying to talk about bringing back the PST there, it's just political suicide when you think about it. It doesn't make sense for her to even bring this up as an issue. Even just saying that she wouldn't do it. I mean, even talking about it, I think, at this point is taboo in Alberta, because it just doesn't make sense, whatever. Because people generally don't like sales taxes to begin with, because they're punitive. They hurt. They're equal towards everyone, but it hurts the people that can least afford them, right? Like poorer people trying to buy groceries, they still get hit with provincial sales tax on a lot of things. And I think that was a lot of the political issue over the harmonized sales tax in BC here, was because it was hitting things like groceries and other necessities that everyone would have to pay on. Whereas if it was just the GST and PST, there would be a lot of things that were exempt.
Yeah.
And you look at what happened with Gordon Campbell, the former premier, who lost and lost a lot of support. And he thought that the Liberals would lose the election if he stayed on. So that's why he resigned. You know, that was a clear message from the from the voting population of BC to say that the government, we don't want this tax. Like, we don't want it at all. And the fact that we've had such economic growth and yet they haven't even considered lowering the PST here is pretty terrible, I think. So the fact that Alberta is thinking of is even discussing possibly putting one in, I think is just awful.
Right. And, you know, just before we go on this story here, you know, this wasn't the coverage at all that you hear in the mainstream media, you know, the hypocrisy and, you know, oh, maybe Rachel Notley will do this before the end of her first term because she did that with a carbon tax. The story in the mainstream media here was that the Wild Rose opposition previously had wanted to, you know, be more like Saskatchewan and focus on slimming down government services. And now the story was, okay, Wild Rose, why don't you guys want a PST? And that's what the mainstream media was going with this week, probably at the request of the government. And also, there's only three mentions of the word carbon in the 2015 NDP platform, and there's no mention of a carbon tax or carbon levy.
Just goes to show that mandate does not mean what people think it means, and people will take mandate to mean, I can do whatever I want if you elect me.
All right. You know, last week's firing line was a bit of a head-scratcher. I'm going to see if we can get through this week.
We'll see if we can. So the headline that stood out for me very early on in the week, and I thought to myself, we have to talk about this. So this was, the headline was, No More Snapchats with Trudeau's Stand-In. Global Affairs Bans Use of Life-Size Cardboard Cutouts of PM. So the Global Affairs Canada, which oversees all diplomatic affairs, has instructed diplomatic missions in the United States to stop using life-size cardboard cutouts of the Prime Minister to promote Canada. The order follows the revelation last week that Prime Ministerial replicas turned up at an event last June organized by the Canadian Consulate in Atlanta and earlier this month at a Canadian music festival in Austin, Texas. The Canadian Embassy in Washington also rush ordered a cutout of its own for use at the Canada Day celebrations last year at a cost of $147.79, including $72.80 for next day delivery. It's not clear if the missions ever had departmental permission for use of the cardboard cutouts. Anna Gibbs, who is the senior events production manager at the Washington Embassy, was excited about the prospect of putting Trudeau's image on display. She said, and I quote, I think this will be a hoot and extremely popular and go well with our Snapchat filter. While some of her colleagues felt the magnified photo of Trudeau in a black suit, black shirt, and silver tie, quote, doesn't seem very prime ministerial, she gushed, looks oh so fine to me.
Can I just stop you right there and say, as soon as I heard cutout and then I heard Snapchat, that loses all levels of seriousness for an embassy. But anyways, Continue.
So this story was released a day before the Liberal budget was dropped upon us on Wednesday, and it actually got more headlines than it as well, which is surprising when you think the budget governs all economic spending in Canada, and somehow this is what was talked about in the media, and it received continuing coverage throughout the week by many outlets, including The Province, The Vancouver Sun, The National Post, The Globe and Mail, Global News, CBC, and many others, oftentimes with the story text being the same across all platforms. So I bet you're asking to yourself at this point, why on earth are we covering this ridiculous story? The problem is what might seem like a humorous or silly article to a lot of people is actually really a scathing indictment of how amalgamated the news media is in Canada, and how if the big media groups like Post Media and Quebecor really want to push a so-called news story into the Canadian population, they can easily do so. I mean, they own everything, it seems. So, I mean, they just have to publish the same text, put it out to the editors across all the platforms, say, this is what you're running with, and they have to do it. And that's what happened. So this is what was talked about instead of
it is insane that this outpaced the budget. It really, really is. And, I mean, the very fact they used the words, gushed, a federal employee gushed that he looks oh so fine to me. That's the other side of the story here. And I mean, your point is entirely valid about the media covering this, but when were the last time federal employees were gushing over a leader?
Probably Trudeau Senior, I'm guessing. There was a lot of that going back then, but clearly we didn't get the coverage that we do nowadays on a lot of things. People in the world are still gushing over our so-called handsome prime minister without really looking at what he's actually doing.
He has nice hair though.
But when you're looking at what a politician is. You look at what he does, not what he looks like. I mean, I think looks are probably important in getting elected. I think there's no doubt about that. But I think a lot of it has to do with policy as well. And I think it's kind of just reducing our media to a bunch of tabloids, yep, just talking about the next big celebrity couple and whatnot.
Yeah, you're entirely right.
And it's embarrassing. It's utterly embarrassing. I mean, this isn't just a head scratcher. It's more of a, what on earth are they doing?
Yeah, and you know, it comes down to amalgamation in the media monopolies in Canada, and that, you know, it's all about how much money we can get for our ads and whatnot, and also where are we going to target these resources, because it's a monopoly. And like you said, all the stories ran with the same text. There's no bigger sign than a monopoly to that. And you know, the free press is supposed to be free, and I think they are still free, but when they're all colluding like this, that kind of defeats the purpose. So that is exactly why we're doing this show and why we have this segment in this week. It's to inform everyone about, okay, there is a big huge budget this week that's going to affect Canada for generations. But we're talking about selfie cutouts of the prime minister instead. Ay, ay, ay. All right. Well, it's time for Word of the Week, the ending of the right side for this week. So, Word of the Week. Normally, we talk about these words the week in advance when we're producing the show. But I have kept Patrick in the dark this week about the Word of the Week.
I can only imagine what it is.
Okay.
I would very much love for you to enlighten all of us.
Right. So today is Earth Hour. So conversely, I've chosen the word achievement for the word of the week. Achievement is a noun, a thing done successfully, typically by effort, by courage, or skill. To reach this stage is a great achievement. As an example, 2, the process or fact of achieving something. 3, a representation of a coat of arms of which all the adjuncts which a bearer of arms are entitled. So obviously we're going for definition number 1 or number 2 here. And that is, of course, the achievement of the human race. The fact we are talking to you guys over an iPod or a car speaker, downloaded over the internet, this broadcast is, rather than, you know, over terrestrial radio. It is an achievement that we have the technology to talk to you guys by distributing this podcast in a technological way that wouldn't have been possible 20 years ago. So that's why today, rather than Earth Hour, I celebrate Human Achievement Hour. Rather than sitting in the dark for an hour, I celebrate the achievements of where we are with our technologies, where we are with our medical technologies, how we can, you know, prevent disease from killing us, vaccinations, immunologies, and whatnot. Where we are as a human race today, compared to where we were 100 years ago, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago. That is what should be celebrated today. The achievement of the human race, rather than sitting in the dark for 1 hour to maybe conserve a bit of power and think about ways of, you know, creating renewable energy, when in fact the ability to create renewable energy comes from human achievement after all. So I think if we want to think about renewable energy and becoming more efficient in our energy generation, we should be celebrating Human Achievement Hour instead of Earth Hour. And that's why the word of the week is achievement.
Well done, Shane.
Thank you.
I think those are words that need to be said.
Yeah. You know, I was never a fan of Earth Hour when it was first announced, and I think ultimately Human Achievement Hour is a much better thing to celebrate instead. So the word of the week this week, on the right side, is achievement, as defined by the New Oxford American Dictionary. All right.
All right.
Anything else this week before we wrap up?
No. BC, it's just attack ads and more donation things. I mean, there's nothing going on.
All righty.
I guess.
Well then, with that being said, you can find us at rightsidenews.ca and on Twitter at Facebook at rightsideca, and we'll see you next week for another episode of The Right Side. Thank you for sharing your time with us.
And we'll be back as soon as there's more things to talk about.